I'm gonna have to force her to tell me. Despite appearances, this woman is a masochist. An extreme masochist. She wants me to force the name out of her. She wants me to hurt her. I can see the images in her mind. Do you want to stay? Otherwise, wait outside!
Not at all. I am a natural voyeur.
Episode 109 of the Cult Matt Mark Cult Film Review Podcast. I'm Matt.
And I'm Mark.
Make sure to hit our blog at cultfilmreview.blogspot.com or shoot us an email at cultfilmreview@gmail.com or please like us at the Cult of Matt and Mark on Facebook. We'd appreciate it. Some fans have already liked us, and we've hit the 30 mark. We're above 30, so now I get stats of how little we're paid attention to on the old Facebooker.
I don't know. I wonder if it's a good idea to look at stats.
I've looked at I look at our download stats. It's about the only one I really care about these days. And that's about it. The blog I don't really check. Our YouTube clips I don't really check all that much. Although Caligula has like almost, I want to say, 250,000 views.
Should have monetized that motherfucker.
Oh, it's just guys with their pants down around their ankles. That's it. You know.
Well, that's why people put all those. God, if you notice on YouTube lately, like if I watch something, it'll stop it. All the like the ones on the side will be like a bunch of women in bikinis. Have you noticed that?
Does it aggregate what
I watch normally?
Yeah, what you're watching normally.
There's no good titillating videos on YouTube. I mean. They make. I know this is no. This is a pretty crazy idea, but they make websites that have naughty videos on them.
I hear that.
And I think there's like more than a dozen.
I know, and they actually tailor them to what kind of smut and nastiness that you're into. So if you're into shemale midget porn, that's like all you get. That's all.
I just want. All I want is a woman who's an extreme masochist.
I didn't, you know what? I didn't really get. Oh, sorry. Our movie this week is the 1985. Is it a cult classic? I don't know what it is.
Oh, yeah.
It's okay. Yeah. It's a cult classic.
It's a neo classic.
Neo cult classic. Life Force, directed by Toby Hooper, who I think is best known for Poltergeist. Isn't that his claim to fame?
Well, I think he's probably best known for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The original and then
the original.
Sequel.
Oh, okay. Well,
though I have not seen either of them, but I think we really need to do the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I think it's supposed to be a seminal piece of horror.
No. I've seen it seen once. It? Yeah.
I was reading somewhere that people still find it disturbing.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying. Disturbing, I think, is a good word. It elevates itself above your typical horror and goes into this disturbing realm, which is really my cup of tea when it comes to horror, because I don't ever get scared, like actually frightened. Mm. I like to be disturbed for horror. That's kind of my deal.
You like those Hostel-like movies, right? Pants around the ankles, pretty standard.
I did watch Eli Roth's first Hostel. Yeah, pants around the ankles. I did get kind of disgusted by it. I wasn't offended more than I was just kind of disgusted. You know, like I didn't want to eat afterward.
I saw a little bit of it. And this may be the second one, I don't know, like on Showtime or something, where some guy got his testicle cut off. I think it was like near the end of the film. Maybe that wasn't Hostel.
Oh, was that in the like the bathroom scene or something?
I mean, no, they were at like some sort of torture prison somewhere. Maybe that's a different
Eli
movie.
Roth? No, I don't know.
Maybe it's not that movie. I always thought it was. I sort of didn't watch. I watched a little bit of it and it's like, ugh.
Yeah, that just kind of, it just unsettled my stomach more than anything. I don't think it actually. It didn't frighten me. I just found it gross, which is strange. I usually don't find anything that gross, but it hit me right.
I didn't really find it gross. Is that it didn't really speak to me. I think there's some sort of like revenge fantasy people have about taking their anger out on people. I prefer to take my anger out on inanimate objects, Janie's future grave, things like that. I don't really feel like taking my anger out on people, but I guess it could be fun. I mean, if you really wanted to get into it, I just don't know if it's a hobby I should pursue or not.
Well, you know what you need to do? Like Joe Rogan says, get into the octagon, my friend.
I've thought that maybe I should get into boxing. It might be.
I didn't even say show news. We're into show news, really, but I didn't.
Oh, I thought show news that we had the Facebook page and some people liked it, and I think it's maybe a nice lowering the barrier of communication.
I just wanted to say, as part of show news, is my honeymoon with Joe Rogan is wearing off. I think I whenever you listen to anybody a lot, they get into the ruts, the conversational ruts. And with Joe Rogan, it's orthorexia. I shouldn't say orthorexia. It's what do you want to call it? Healthy eating. He's obsessed with healthy eating. And the octagon, which bores me to tears. There's nothing more boring than Joe Rogan going on about UFC fighters.
But the UFC itself is pretty exciting.
I guess I don't watch it. I'm sure it is. Like dudes beating the shit out of each other with really thinly padded gloves. And every time I watch it, they're always just kind of wrestling on the ground.
Well, that's an important aspect of it. I mean, it's a mix between kickboxing and wrestling pretty much.
Yeah.
So mostly what you see is either you see stand-up kickboxing like fighting, or you see people doing positioning for holds.
Yeah. Well, whatever. Talking about it bores me. So, I don't know. I'm looking for a new drug. I don't know who my does Tom Likas have a podcast?
He should, but I haven't listened to Tom Likas since I was like in college.
Women are bitches. That's all I remember.
There is a comedian that does like I've been watched a little bit of. I mean, I've been listened to a podcast. Was it Comedy Bang Bang? And the guy on there has a comedian in that does a great Likas impression. It's fucking Likas. Hilarious. Really? Have you ever listened to Comedy Bang Bang?
No, but
it's
now
pretty,
that
it's
you
a pretty good podcast. You might want to check it out. It used to be called Comedy Death Ray. There's even a TV show that goes with it, though. I've never seen the TV show. But the podcast is pretty good. You might enjoy it. They usually have people doing voices of either made up characters or these sort of insane takes on famous people.
I would love a Tom Likas take
I don't know who the comedian is, but it's fucking hilarious.
I would say that Tom Likas sycophants are probably as detestable as Rush Limbaugh sycophants or ditto heads.
Man, I don't know. I mean, Tom Likas has sort of gone away.
I know. He was such a fat, ugly toad, and he was talking about banging chicks left and it was just really grody. It was like listening to Bob Guccione going on about making movies just disgusted me at a certain point. Well, I wanted to segue from our Tom Likas discussion because I think it was appropriate here. Speaking of women sucking your soul away from you, as Tom Likas would accuse all womankind of doing, our movie this week is the 1985 Life Force. Did I already say that?
We went right into it. This is a real fucking disaster of a podcast already.
Sorry, folks. This is part of Mark's Dan O'Bannon-O-Thon.
What? Wasn't this yours idea?
I thought I read somewhere in the trivia that he may not even have written the final screenplay. They may have scrapped it, his screenplay, and went with somebody else's.
I heard that there were some modifications that he wasn't happy about, but I don't know how heavy those modifications were. You read something that was a complete rewrite?
I guess. I don't know.
I tried to listen really controversial? I downloaded the... there's no audio version of the source material for this movie. Is called the very inventively titled science fiction novel, The Space Pirates.
The Space Vampires.
The Space Vampires, sorry. There you go. Jesus. And that was actually the title of this film very late in the production until they changed it to Life Force. Pretty
better name, way better name than Space Vampires. Space Vampires is cheesy as shit.
I think it's time for a rewrite of The Space Vampires. I mean, vampires are hot. Space is hot with like the Star Trek business. I think it's time for like you call it the Space Vamps or something.
It could be a cross. This could really sell. Ender's Game and Vampires, that would get the Twilight crowd and the young adult folks in on it. So
Space Vampires Game and Werewolves. Space Werewolves.
Plot rundown real quick. The story concerns a joint British American space probe of Halley's Comet. Inside the comet, the astronauts, headed by Carlson, played by Steve Railsback. I haven't seen much old Steve lately.
I think there's a good reason for that.
Yeah. Find a spaceship that contains the dead bodies of several aliens, along with the naked bodies of three human-like creatures in suspended animation. They bring the aliens aboard the ship for examination, but the specimens are sloppily guarded, and soon the trio spread contagion among the population of the ship. Returning to Earth, the beautiful space vampire, Matilda May, escapes into London and begins to feed off the bodies of the unwary Britons, turning the city into a zombie-populated wasteland. It is now left to Carlson to stop the vampire invaders. There you have it. So,
I mean, I guess that sums it up, but somehow it misses the magic of this movie.
What is the... So, okay.
The first
Where
off,
are we going to go with this movie?
No, first, here we go. We got to start it off with the big question. What did Rose think of this film?
Why do you keep saying that? You know she doesn't watch these.
I could have sworn. Every time I've asked that, you've given me a nuanced, short essay that she wrote.
No, I have to watch this. I watch this on the margins where you have 14, where this interrupts your 14 hours of
Ni No Kuni.
Nimuni.
You know, I helped somebody in that video game that had an eating disorder. That's how deep that is.
Whoa. Yeah. Really? Yeah.
It was an enormous giant cow queen of she was called the, what they call her? The Mu Emperor or something? She had a problem. Right. She was eating too much.
With a name like that, I don't see how you could not eat that much. All right. I have to watch my films on the margins of day-to-day living. So I
after you
watch them
after you
later
purchase
the,
I think they released it back in the 2013 special reissue edition of Life Force. You went down to Best Buy and picked that up. What do you think about the transfer?
It was good. Mark supplied me with a, I would say, perfectly legal fair use. Is that right? Would you say like
you might be able to make a fair use argument after spending about $10,000 in legal fees?
Oh, okay. I thought it was like the taping, thing is that taping the a CD for your friend kind of thing, right?
Isn't that where that falls? Pretty sure that's not totally legit. Oh, let's just not talk about that anymore. I will say that the version that we both watched was actually the cheap DVD release from, I think, like the late 90s, early 2000s, and not the remastered version that came out, unfortunately. Okay. Though I thought the transfer was pretty good, but I guess they filmed it on the 70mm format on film, and I guess the quality of the film is really good, which probably makes the special effects not look as good, would be my guess. Would be the only effect.
I thought
that.
They actually looked fine, especially the blue soul tornado in the center of London. I thought that looked okay.
I thought I enjoyed it quite a bit. You knew it was a cheap DVD because there's no separate tracks, audio tracks, but also the main folder on the decrypted CD, DVD was titled Life Force. There was they fucking misspelled the directory for the film sat in.
I thought you were going to say Life Force.
Yeah, that would have been funny, but it was Life Force.
Because for whatever reason, in my head, I was calling this movie Life Farce all week. I don't know why. I don't know how that happens. I think I spend a lot of time alone at work, and I don't have the internet or solitaire to. So I just think of stupid, weird stuff and. It's kind of like a half dream state I'm in most of the time at work. But anyway, I was thinking, what's our movie this week? Oh, Life Farce. And then I was thinking of Larry the Cable Guy's miserable, like 5% Rotten Tomato movie, Delta Farce, which had probably the most racist premise I think I'd ever heard of, which was he's a commando. Like, that makes any sense. And the plane goes astray where he's supposed to go to the Middle East and he ends up in Mexico and then he crash lands in Mexico and assumes all the Mexicans are Arabs or something. And it's called Delta Farce. And I was just thinking about how detestable Larry the Cable Guy is and how he's a fraud.
That's generally pretty funny
because
he's making fun of himself and all people like him in the United States. I guess I don't see where that's the comedy of it, right? He's an idiot.
Well, that's true because actually I saw Larry the Cable Guy's original stand-up bit before he was Larry the Cable Guy. Doesn't sound like Larry the Cable Guy. He just sounds like some dude.
He figured out a way to make tons of money, man. Look,
I know, but
he put an Olympic-sized pool in his third house, and you're knocking him.
I understand. I guess why are we having to deal with redneck frauds? shouldn't rednecks be like authentic? But no, you have people on TV who have to imitate rednecks. It's really weird. It creeps me out. Like the Duck Dynasty guys. Wow, we're off topic. Let's get back into life.
Okay, well,
I apologize.
Talking about offensive things, there may have been some stuff that was offensive in this film.
I've been in space for 6 months, and she looks perfect to me.
Oh, yeah. That guy was having a little problem in his space pants, as they say.
What's wrong with that?
Let's just say that urine catheter was getting a little stretched to its maximum tensile strength.
I mean, you're floating out in...
So you just saw a bunch of desiccated bat creatures. You're in the first alien ship ever come across by humans.
And there's a hot piece of ass floating there.
You see a pretty nice-looking naked chick in some sort of crystal. Mind you,
pretty
crystal.
Nice, dude. She was hot.
And your first thought is, God, I'd want to fuck the shit out of her.
I think I would. I think I would. I would be there.
I think the reason that it's unexpected because everybody is enthralled by her.
Well, okay. Part of that is some kind of charm that the vampires are.
It's a traditional power of vampires.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of this.
Their victims.
So, you know what? This movie sort of reminded me a little bit of the novel. I'm going to say the novel I Am Legend, which gives more of a biological plague credo or credence.
Really?
Is that right? To vampires? Am I using the right words there?
This really harkened back to like the first time that vampires was really codified in Bram Stoker's book.
Well, it's giving sort of a sci-fi alien explanation for vampires, right?
I don't see where the functionality of the vampires is really explained in any plausible sense.
It's not. It's pretty much fantastical, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if anything, they seem like vampires. They have powers that are beyond
rational
thinking at the moment. They seem magical.
No teeth. Come on.
What do you mean, no teeth?
I wanted teeth. I'm sorry. I'm old school. I wanted teeth.
You didn't like the soul suck through the face?
Yeah, no, that was pretty cool. No, it was cool. But to be called a vampire, I need the teeth. I know.
Look, man, we're all vampires. It's just a matter of degrees, which is true. Except there's no such thing as life force.
No, but there are people who, usually the people who are overly happy in life, I call them vampires because they do suck my energy right out of me.
Really?
You know, people, like the overly cheery, non-ironic, non-sarcastic people that we cohabitate the earth with.
When do you run into those people?
I don't want to name names, but there's been a handful of people at work.
Oh, there are? There's super positive people there?
Yeah. Overly cheery. They're usually a little churchy. They're usually a little religious.
Well, that helps.
It does add some non-ironic, non-sarcastic, overly energetic.
I think you call it earnestness.
Earnestness that really is kind of my Lex Luthor, really. They suck the energy right out of me. They're like vampires. I don't know what it is. That's all I got.
Okay, super. All right, well, let's get back to the sexism in this movie.
I'm sure you'd rather be recuperating with a pretty nurse.
I'm sure you'd rather be recuperating.
Hey, speak for yourself.
With a
Mark and I both are cohabitating with nurses. Something to be said about it.
I'm recuperating as we speak.
By the way, does Jean get offended at the sexy nurse stereotype?
She couldn't give a shit about stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Right. Rose gets mildly upset.
Oh, really?
But yeah.
Jean's unflappable. She doesn't really give a shit.
She has limited her energies to not caring about that, which is pretty noble. I can understand.
My favorite is there's a commercial that makes the rounds on TVs every once in a while. It's like from Johnson & Johnson, appreciation to all those hardworking nurses out there. And its tagline is a little like musical tagline at the end. It goes, "You're a nurse. You make a difference." I sing that to her every once in a while. Did you catch that?
Nah, it's pretty good. I'm going to have to use it.
Yeah, I'm sure you must have seen it. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube. It's pretty hilarious.
We need to get into this movie, man. We need to wade up to our chest in life force. We're avoiding.
Okay, well, let me start with, usually I wait till later, but maybe this will get us going.
All right.
My question and answer segment.
Okay, let's do it.
Here comes your question.
What are you?
Why are you so human? So perfect.
So what are you? Why are you so perfect? So human.
Okay.
And that's so, I was going to go into a Spock thing, but it didn't really get there.
All right. So this is a hybrid movie. Let's just call it a hybrid movie. Isn't that an easy thing to do? It's
look, you got to answer the question, Matt.
What was the question? Why are you so perfect? Because you're a movie creation.
Why are you so human? So perfect.
What?
Why are you so human? Questions. So perfect.
So stupid.
What's so stupid?
Those questions are just like, it's like, I don't know, it's sort of stock movie fodder questions. They're not.
Well, I mean, it gets at the point of what are these vampires, right?
Well, let's talk about
it. Well, look, you want me to answer the question? Okay, I'll just give you the answer, and then we'll talk about it if you don't want to play the game.
Well, what's the game?
We entered your minds and found their new bodies. I took my shape from your mind. I took your language. I became the woman I found there in your deepest thoughts, your deepest needs.
Okay, so let's get into the nature of the vampires. Let's.
You don't like my question answer segment?
I don't know what the question is. Why are you? What's the question?
Well,
filter
what are
it through my whiskey soaked mind. What exactly are we talking about with what I'm trying to answer? What are the vampires?
Yeah, why are they come in female form? Why do they look so beautiful?
Well, okay. That's a fucking good question. There's a lot about this movie that doesn't make any sense.
I think it makes perfect sense.
Why are
they saw them coming aboard. They sensed these invaders into their spacecraft. And they developed a plot where they would use their powers. They have psycho,
psychokinesis.
Well, not psychokinesis, but telepathy to read the minds of these people coming aboard, create these creatures that they desire so much that they have to take with them out of their derelict ship.
Right.
And they take them back to Earth and do their bidding.
Sure. It's a way to exploit their hosts and get what they want out of them. But it's so impractical. A lot of this is just this film or the story builds up.
I'm getting this terrible impression that you did not like this film.
No, I didn't. I'm just going to go right out and say it. I didn't like it because it's overly contrived. I think that's my biggest complaint. And it starts with learning that the movie is called Space Vampires. So I get
the Space Vampires.
The whatever. And so I immediately think, okay, this is a hybrid. And whenever you deal with hybrid film or stories or genre, you have to walk sort of a fine line because what you're doing is a bit cheap, I would say. You know, it's kind of a, you have to be very tactical. You can't oversaturate the idea or it just comes off as campy and silly, which this movie kind of did. I'm like, okay, it's implausible for starters.
It's implausible that there is some sort of parasitic spacefaring beings that happened across Earth due to some circumstance.
And
that they want to harvest this sort of special kind of energy. It doesn't seem to really exist in reality, but it does in the universe of this movie. And they want to harvest it to reinvigorate themselves and their ship.
No. That's fine, but the whole her deal doesn't make any sense. Like, her motivations don't make any sense. Whoever this queen vampire is, mm-hmm. is okay. So you have they hoover up souls.
Yeah, that's their goal, is to hoover up, a few, maybe 100,000 souls or something worth.
So
of energy.
This whole thing is like a giant vacuum cleaner that goes from planet to planet. And just sucks life energy, life force. Sure, that's fine. I get that. Yeah. And just sucks it off the planet. But why the intermediaries? Why the intrigue?
There's a mechanism. Well, I mean, they just can't sit in orbit in low Earth orbit and suck up the souls.
Fuck, why not?
Fuck, why
That's
not?
That's just not the mechanics of it. There's where they have to go and interact with the beings they're taking it from. It's this parasitic action. It's sort of part of their life cycle. They go in, they infect a population, they have this thing where the people they infect are carriers and go and infect more people in this rapid, like, virus-like expansion within a area. And then they have a special organs within the actual original vampire. They're able to collect and send this energy back to their hive. It's pretty straightforward, isn't it?
So the original vampire, the three vampires, mm-hmm. are more or less antenna for focusing collected energy back up to the mothership.
Well, and that's one of their aspects. They're like a part of a multi-life cycle organism. They're the things that go down to the planet and infect the population there to allow them to harvest. They're like soldier ants. They're created to go down there, infect, and pulled in and sent to the ship. I mean, it seems pretty straightforward in the movie. Now, the movie, its tone changes dramatically over
the film.
Well,
maybe that's what got me. But that's what skewed me.
The story's pretty straightforward. In fact, I sort of like the story. I mean, the story is they're checking out Halley's Comet with a manned mission, which is cool. I mean, it'd be nice to do. It'd be pretty expensive, right? I like how they talk a little bit about their fake gravity business.
I thought that was kind of fun. It was fine.
And they find an alien vessel there. It seems derelict, and I think it is, that there's some problem there, and that this thing with this new infection routine is sort of a last-ditch effort by the space vampires. Anyways, the machinations of the space vampires are successful. Their infective, organisms that they send get taken back down to Earth, and the space vampires realize that there is some sort of coordinated effort to stop them on the planet. That these beings are intelligent enough to possibly interfere with their action. And so they take the space girl notices this and creates this red herring, this sort of wild goose chase to send the prime actors on.
Is that what that was?
Yeah,
really what it was? It was a red herring.
Yeah, it was just to get them out of the city so the infection could take place as planned.
So if you have such...
The infection takes place. They collect the energy and they're off.
I got it. That's fine. That's the movie. I understand. But there's a lot troubling me about the plausibility. When I say plausibility, I'm willing to buy into the universe. That's fine. I'm willing to buy into space vampires. Okay. Mm-hmm. For starters, if you have such crazy power that you can jump from human being to human being and possess them, it just seems that alone would change the whole dynamic of what you're trying to do. And the other thing is there's a epidemiology theory that they're one of the reasons that, thank God, like Ebola and Marburg and all these horrible hemorrhagic fevers that flare up in Africa never get very far. It's because they kill the victim too quickly.
Yeah.
And so I was watching this and I was like, oh man, they got like 2 hours before everybody like burns out and turns to
it's a surgical strike by these vampires. They go to a population center, they do a super fast turnover where it's just a 2 hour incubation. And they get their soul, they get their life force and they get the fuck out of there.
Why do they have to get the fuck out of there? Just camp out, man. Just fucking hoover up the whole planet. We're good to go. We're just topping off the tanks, and then we're going to go off to wherever.
I mean, they could pick up some jerry cans and fill them up and tie them on the sides of their spaceship, sure.
So basically these three vampires are like three teenage kids sneaking up to a car in the good old days and siphoning out some gas into a jerry can and say, get us to the next party. I mean, that's kind of what they're doing.
I mean, it seems like these vampires are sort of in a bad way.
Yeah, well, for starters, they're not very efficient. If you're, like, turning your whole biological battery into a cinder that quickly and then feeding off each other, which I guess they were doing because all those, like, floating, desiccated bats.
That's sort of the idea, I guess. I mean, you have no idea how long they've been stranded there.
That's true, I don't.
It could have been millions of years.
I just assumed that it was every 76 years. Because they're on Halley's Comet.
My question is, if the ship was in such a bad way, how did it power up to get to the Earth before they even started collecting souls?
See, there's this is the hole. Kind of stuff that I'm, like I said, I'm willing to.
You could drive a 2-mile-long spaceship through that.
I'm willing to embrace. Was it that? I thought it was like 150 miles. That was some fucking crazy.
In the book, they call the. I got like a third of the way into the book.
Oh, okay.
They call it's terrible writing. They call the. They call the space. It's much larger spacecraft, and they call it the Stranger, which I thought was pretty cool.
Oh, kind of sounds like a little rendezvous with Rama.
Maybe a little bit. I don't know how. I don't know where it goes from there. I just got to the point where they're coming back from the to finding it. So you have some problems with it. You didn't enjoy the movie.
Well, it's just
look. I mean, I don't know what problem you could have with some of this acting.
Bring me 3 doses. 3.
Was that what?
That was just there, just people yelling and screaming.
It did have the actor from A Clockwork Orange. I forget that gentleman's name. It had some pretty, was it Aubrey Morris?
Oh, yeah, he plays Percy, one of the chancellors.
And then you had some nice Patrick Stewart fucking crazy.
Yeah, boy,
shit
he chewed up the scenery pretty bad. But, of course, he was asked a lot. And he plays basically 2/3 of the time possessed by the space girl.
He just screams remotely. And flops. That's kind of what he does.
But he does have one good line.
He's in solitary confinement. He's been naughty.
Yeah.
And I thought the rubber face of him with the blood pouring out was pretty nice.
Yeah, that didn't make that. See, some of that stuff, I was like, is this, what? Wait a minute. They're almost turning into the woman inside the helicopter, and then she doesn't get it together, and she just kind of just plops into a puddle, right?
Well, I think she had left her body there at the at St. James Cathedral, and then she hopped into another body, and then when they were flying the bodies back to London, she was able to. They must have been near the, and she was able to drop down back into her original body to do the.
It's these contrivances that I think got me about.
I guess I don't see how you could say this about any film. They're contrived, the things that just happen to be the coincidences in the film.
Because they exhibit these crazy omniscient, omnipotent powers, yet they're so beholden to their limited efficiency, for lack of a better word. Like, she can hop from person to person in possession.
Yeah, why doesn't she just hop to the main character she's having trouble with and have them kill themselves?
Well, okay, that's the other part of this that just doesn't make any sense. Okay, the commander, Tom, what's his name? Tom?
Carlson.
What the fuck is up with that synergy going on with her? Why does she, I'm a part of you. I need to be part of you.
Because of the answer that you didn't listen to that I played earlier. She reached into his mind and took his ideal female. She's always been connected with him. When they sensed them coming into their vessel, he was the one that she took that image from. So she's connected to him because he was the target. He was the main target for her use of her enthralling abilities.
A rip off of Stanislaw Lem's Solaris? Is that what I get from this?
I guess you could
cheesy, stupid version.
Man, you're being really harsh. You're harsh.
I'm an angry drunk right now. By the way, are you drinking?
I mean, was connected to him, and I think the problem was that he was stronger than she expected.
A little soap opera-y. I didn't get it. I didn't understand the importance of that relationship other than, okay, so they need a corporeal image to make it to Earth. They pick this guy's brain for, what's he into? Well, he's into hot chicks. And
who would have guessed?
Yeah, I know. Okay, so I'm going to be a hot chick. French although that chicks. Doesn't explain the two hot dudes next to her, which I would have just left.
We're all like certain percent gay. Well, see, that was the difference. There's two different life forms that work in synergy to do the transference to explain that in the film.
Oh, Jesus, really? More exposition? I thought Dan O'Bannon hated that shit. What am I? All right. I'm sorry. I'm just picking it a little bit.
So what format? Did you watch this on your phone, Matthew?
No, I watched it on my big TV.
Okay, that's good.
I was fully immersed.
Okay, well, let's. I was going to play this later, but let me. Let me play some. I have a couple. I have Leonard Maltin talking about this film.
Oh, Leonard.
Back in 1985, he was working for.
By the way, this got good reviews. I mean, it's definitely a.
I mean, 67%. Yeah, well, those are a lot of those are retrospective reviews because this is pre-internet. Really, this movie was largely panned by the critics and entirely ignored by the fans. It was a insane,
and the Academy.
It was an insane flop. It was a terrible. Terrible financial hit to the production company, which went out of business a few years later, largely based on this. They spent a lot of money on this film, and it has
a lot of production value, this movie.
So anyways, let me Maltin summarizes the film, I think, really succinctly here. So let's listen to him.
It starts as an outer space movie, then becomes a vampire movie, and then turns into an end of the world movie.
I really like that. Because that's what happens.
I'm fine with all that. I'm fine with all that. Three distinct segments.
And I think maybe that's why I liked it, because it had these three. It has like the space stuff, which I don't know why they wanted to show it in flashback. I would have liked it to be just all the space stuff. And then there's sort of a mystery, sort of a detective bit in the middle. And then there's everything's gone to hell, mayhem. Bit at the end. I found that really entertaining, bouncing between those three paradigms, and I really like that Maltin called that out. I think that's really what the sort of a bit. It's a bit of a roller coaster ride. This movie.
Maybe I'm being overly harsh. I do like that part of the hybridization. I do like that, like Kill List. I'm thinking of Kill List a little bit. We reviewed that in 101, and it was a hybrid movie. This is too a hybrid movie, like Leonard Maltin was pointing out.
Yeah, it's like a tribrid.
But my problem is because I'm into sci-fi, I'm into reading sci-fi, I write sci-fi, I always have this kind of fundamental plausibility issue, and it's plot related because this is highly integrated into the plot, that I'm trying to think of the gimmick used, and it's used a lot in fantasy, where you get this contrived mythology or this contrived set of rules about the universe that are discussed and maybe overly discussed in the film, and the rules aren't obvious and they have to be explained to you in some fashion as you watch. And I got that a little bit. I was like, okay, why isn't she just fucking killed him? I mean, they're on Earth. She's sucking the souls off the planet. What the hell does she need him for?
All right. You know? I'm not really interested in going down the plausibility line. Let me talk a little bit about the inspiration for the film. And I think that Maltin had an interesting insight there too.
This movie reminded me of all the crummy science fiction and horror films I used to see at Saturday matinees when I was growing up. I'll bet guys like Toby Hooper, who directed this film, and the fellows who wrote it saw the same movies.
So, I mean, we've talked about doing some of the old, like, Hammer films.
Yeah.
And I think they have something in common with these films. I'm not sure, but at least that's what I've seen elsewhere written. This is sort of a little bit back to old schlock.
So it's maybe like a Plan 9 from outer space with a huge budget and...
A little bit, yeah.
Kind of. I mean, that's sort of what it is. Mm-hmm. I'm not dismissing it. It had some really great visuals. It had some, like the alien ship I enjoyed. It was weird, organic, fun. I love the look of the outside of it. That kind of got me going. I loved some of the makeup work with the reanimated desiccated corpses.
Yeah, I mean, I thought you'd really enjoy all these old practical effects.
Oh, I did. I really enjoyed all that. And I hate to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but there's some really good stuff, like when the desiccated zombie awakens, and it looks pretty good, even though it's a big puppet. It looks
even though you can decent. See some of the vinyl folding here and there. I thought it looked really neat. They do some stuff with like some suction with air to show things sort of contracting.
The light
effects.
You have
these weird facial prosthetics, things bubbling as like flesh was reanimated.
I did like when the SAS guy went in. Was it his father's lab? I forget the relationships. But
you mean
there's
when
a
Kane
nice...
went in to see Falada near the end?
Yeah, and
Falada was the
like...
silver-haired guy that was the biochemist.
Right, and he turns out to be an agent of the vampires, right?
I mean, that's no, kinda... not so much. He's just another victim of the events in London. I think everybody's just become infected.
So there's
and he has this great. Is he talking about the great line?
Well, I'm just like, I like what I really liked was the panorama, the crazy London behind him.
You know, oh, yeah.
The fiery windows. London. Yeah, it looked great. That kind of stuff. But what were you going to say about his character?
Well, I thought all of these British characters had this really dry manner about them that I really enjoyed. Like when Kane comes to see Falada at the end and he says, nice to see you alive. This is what Falada says in reply.
I reciprocate the sentiment.
Yeah.
I liked a lot of that dry British humor. There's quite a bit of it throughout this movie. You know, the interesting thing is in pre-production, Falada was expected to be played by Klaus Kinski.
Yeah, I know. I read that Klaus was tapped for the role, which would have been nuts having Klaus. I think it would have made for an incredible psychotic movie. It would have been probably pretty good, but...
Yeah. There's a couple things. Another character I really like was another one of the British guys, Bukowski, and he has this. I mean, he's talking about some of the alien artifacts a little bit, and I enjoyed. Here he's talking about the vessels that they came back in.
They're not precisely physical objects, more like a sort of force field. We're a bit out of our depth here.
I thought that was really nice because you could imagine, you know, like maybe a material scientist getting some exotic material and really going, I have no idea what the fuck this thing is.
You didn't find that a little bit of exposition that was unnecessary?
I didn't think it wasn't exposition to explain anything. He was just saying they were talking about the incident. They said they were looking at this artifact and he says, we're really out of our depth here. And I think this is sort of early in the film after the infection starts to happen. And I just thought it was interesting to see. I thought it was rather nice to see a character sort of at his wit's end a little bit.
Yeah.
I thought it was a nice little piece of dialogue.
I'm with you. You obviously enjoyed the movie more than I did.
Yeah, I did enjoy the movie.
I think when I first watched the movie when I was, I don't know, 12, 13. I did get a sense of confusion about it. And I think maybe that prejudiced me a little bit watching it the second time, that I was befuddled by the commander and the space vampire's relationship, the need for it. I don't know. There's just something that... And I like sort of intricate plots, but for whatever reason, you've explained it to me, the rationale of the relationship, but to me, it just felt overly contrived a little bit.
I'm not saying that they couldn't have streamlined this bad boy down.
I know. It could have used some work, and I don't know what it is.
I just don't think I was bothered as much by those faults. I guess I enjoyed the feel and the sense of the movie. And I enjoyed some of the small lines and some of the portrayal, especially by the British characters.
So what do you think this movie bombed? What do you think it bombed?
Well, I think it's because people didn't give a shit about it. I mean, why didn't people give a shit about it? Because it's a little bit of a mess. It doesn't really fit in anybody's idea of an exciting film. I mean, for the simpletons, it's too confusing. For the art house people, it's too much of a mess.
Well, it's too B movie ish.
Yeah, it's too much of a schlocky film. Yeah. I mean, I think the only people this film really are drawn to are people that can have fun with it and enjoy, you know, some of the special effects, some of the quirks of the characters, and people that can overlook its faults. Not that you should overlook its faults necessarily, but it only really appeals to people that can overlook the faults.
Well, you mentioned it had some sort of wittiness to it, like some deadpan wittiness to some of the characters. Do you think it could have leveraged a little bit more of that, made it a little bit more even through the film?
I mean, it's sort of a sort of a British sensibility. I don't know how. I mean, all the stuff that happens in the second and third acts are full of that. I mean, with the British characters. So the only thing that's incongruous with that is the space scenes, which seems like it's mostly the main characters up there are Americans.
Well, I'm just thinking if this could have been more of a, you know, speaking of London, more of a flavor of an American Werewolf in London that really had a beautiful mix of humor.
Yeah, well, I mean, horror. I see American Werewolf at London is very similar to this movie, a movie with a lot of faults that has some really nice parts about it, and that to enjoy it, you have to look past its faults.
True. I just think it could have. It's silly. Obviously, when I say silly, that's maybe a little bit denigrating. Mm-hmm. It's really out there. Genre hybrid mixing. If you could have just injected a little bit of humor into it, like, okay, we all know that this is a vampires in space, zombie, kind of weird detective movie, so let's make a little bit more light of it during the film. I think it would have, without making it cheap, I think it could have benefited from some better writing.
Boy, I don't think that's the direction this movie needed to go in. I think, if anything, it probably needed to be streamlined a little bit if it wanted to have a wider audience.
Okay,
and so probably re-fucking cast Carlson. Like, maybe make the cast all British or something.
He was terrible.
He was way over the top, especially with like the guy playing Kane and Bukowski. I mean Bukowski and Falada. Those guys were rather reserved.
So who would you have thrown in the Commander Carlson role?
I would maybe, and I think the movie might have been improved by writing that character out of the film.
Well, see, but then you're getting rid of the primary modality of transfer of the vampires to the planet Earth.
No, right? I don't see why you need to get that. You fried everybody in the shuttle. Fried the Carlson character too. And have the shuttle.
Just have
them be rescued. And they come down to Earth and they got three humanoid bodies. They don't know where the fuck they came from. And craziness ensues. And all of a sudden there's a huge spaceship in low Earth orbit. I think that would have been more interesting.
Well, I know, but you see, you just wrote out the Commander Carlson character, which I thought was ancillary to the plot.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Said, oh, that's what I was saying. That's what
no,
I was saying.
This movie could be...
Well, I'm saying that's why he was in
tied
there.
To him and blah blah blah.
Look, you're complaining that it's too convoluted. I'm saying you're saying, what can we do to improve this movie? Streamline it.
I'm with you.
Get rid of the worst actor. Get rid of the worst character. Get rid of the most convoluted part of the plot.
Yeah,
I think that would do a lot better than putting like Dane Cook in there to be like some sidekick.
Dane Cook.
All right.
I think Dane Cook was like 15 in 85 or younger.
Okay, his father, yeah. Dean Cook.
Dean Cook.
There's one other. Since we disagree so strongly about this movie, let me talk about.
I'm not really strongly disagree with it. It was okay. I'm just whatever.
Since we so strongly disagree about this movie, I want to add one other thing that I thought was really strange about this movie, and that's the soundtrack by Henry Mancini.
Yeah, Henry Mancini.
I thought it was a rather nice soundtrack. I mean, it was scored by him. It was performed. The whole thing was performed by the London Symphony Orchestra. And
a lot of money.
And the theme, the main theme to the movie was, I thought, very powerful. I'm going to play you and our listeners an excerpt from that. It was pretty good.
No, that's not bad.
I thought it was a real ripping song. I ripped the whole. They play the whole piece over the credits, and it's a really good piece. It's got a lot like little flourishes in it. It's really great. The rest of it's pretty melodic sort of stuff. A little more Henry Mancini feeling with full
thanks for the memories.
And is that Henry Mancini?
Yeah, it's Henry Mancini.
But that piece just really, it's very stirring. Gets my follicles to jump up a little bit.
Here's the biggest mystery I pose to you about this film. Why the fuck does the poster have a gigantic eyeball hovering over the planet Earth?
That's a good question.
The fuck does that mean?
I think it was probably a production thing to try to make it look a little more art housey. Like sort of like how you take, you've seen these book covers.
I've seen the book. I've made those book covers.
In the sci-fi section or something. Movie about like some dwarf and an elf that go to a castle to get like a golden crown. And the cover's got like a peacock feather and an old bicycle tire on it.
You know what's awesome is I have Chris Foss's, one of his coffee table books called Hardware. And there's like a, there's a foreword in there and there's a bunch of stuff talking about his art. And he talks about doing book covers for Isaac Asimov. And he said, and something like, it was in the form of like kind of an interview question, but like, I never read any of those books. I just knew that I had to get a cover out by the end of the week. And so he would just put some fucking spaceship and a planet, and then he was like, here you go. And he didn't ever, it's like, it could have been about robots with no spaceships at all, but who gave a shit? And he would just, it's like, put a spaceship on it and it's sci-fi. And so he would just, that's what he would do. He wouldn't even give a shit.
Yeah. There's another movie poster. I think it was probably the original one for some marketing guy came in and put the eyeball over the planet. It was like a standard, like Star Wars montage.
Of places. Yeah. No, that came up when I inserted this movie into my Plex media server to watch on TV. And I was like, it looked like, definitely looked like a Star Wars montage. Yeah.
So I think that was probably the original one that got, when people are trying to, people got pretty worried probably when the final cut.
I think the marketing kind of just fucking had a panic attack.
Think you could market this film. I mean, it's just, this thing is, it's absurd that this movie got made at its budget.
Yeah, I think
it was just a bad idea.
And how did that happen? Was it
from an? I think it was an inexperienced, a new moneyed production group, and I think they just made it was just a bad executive decision. And I think that the movie got. I think there was a lot of oversight by production. I think there was a lot of notes in this film. At least that's what I heard.
Well, there's a lot of movies that flop that for whatever reason, can't figure out. Like, I thought John Carter was great. I thought that was a decent movie, followed the book, gave me everything I wanted as sort of a Edgar Rice Burroughs fan. And I was like, why did it flop? I was like, well, I guess just because, middle America is sort of moronic. And I was like, John Carter, why is he on Mars? I don't get it. With a name like John Carter, it doesn't mean you're on Mars. And get some of these fundamental marketing problems that the movie had. But
I'll be honest with you. That's one main reason I wasn't interested. Mars is a big fucking red dust ball. I'm not that interested in a space movie set on it. It's implausible.
Were you off to a Larry the Cable Guy concert that night? Is that why you missed the opening?
I was seeing the original Kings of Comedy. I like to keep it urban.
All right, but this movie, I can definitely see why it went down the shitter and
this is a niche movie. It's just amazing that they spent tons of money on it. That's why I think it makes it so special. It's like sort of a schlocky movie that has super high production values, and that's what tickles me about this film. It's something that never should have seen the light. It shouldn't exist. And that's why I
guess
I love
maybe.
It.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of those B movies that get A-level funding, and that's definitely what this movie had going for it. Casting, like I had heard that John Gielgud was up for the role that Patrick Stewart took over.
Mm.
And I was like, fucking two Shakespearean actors? Like, those guys aren't cheap. Especially known Shakespearean actors.
But Gielgud do anything for a check. The check must not have been big enough.
I don't know if he'd suck the director's wiener. I'm pretty sure he wouldn't do that.
Maybe did Caligula.
Oh, that's true.
If he does Caligula, he'll do anything.
All right. So we're getting up on the hour. Let's hit the review.
Janet Maslin from the New York Times, who we visited before, reviewed this movie back on June 21st of 1985. I was really disappointed that Ebert didn't review this one. It seems like he would either have a good time ripping it apart or give it some, I don't know, some leeway due to the tits that are
in the movie. I think he would have gave it more of a better review than Janet gave it.
Yeah, so Maslin tears it apart, agreeing largely with Matthew.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I'm not, in no way
I win.
Am I saying that your opinion is not valid.
I win. I am the champion of this podcast.
She says, this film is going to make no sense once you started watching it. And she sums it up as vampire porn.
Well, okay, let me halt that. Mm-hmm. Porn, she's fallen in it.
Full bush. Full bush. I think I saw some lip at one time.
She's like, it's naked chick porn. Porn, am I right? That's cheap. Calling it vampire porn's dumb. Dumb. Anyway, go ahead.
All right. So the synergy has shown its cracks.
I know already.
She comments about talking about the scene where they're examining some of the desiccated corpses left on Earth. That one of the actors says the line, "And this was murder." That was Kane who said that. Less quick-witted participants asks while examining what one such body. That's actually not what I wanted to read.
Okay.
He's talking about, sorry. Though I found that pretty funny, that line in there. Was this murder?
Was it, well, it's...
Well, was it like some sort of industrial accident? Right? Well, like, if you find a space lion and you take it to Earth and it reanimates out of its sleep and mauls somebody to death, is that murder?
Yeah, I would be like, I don't think it's aspartame poisoning, so yes, it's murder. Well, I would
really, you would
up.
Call a space lion that is basically in all senses a lion, mauls one of the guards where it's being kept captive, you would call that murder?
And not as sort of a legal type of...
See, you'd have a hard time calling that event murder. Really, if you think about it.
Well, I would never call it murder. I'd say, if that's some fucked up shit, I wouldn't know what to call it.
Yeah, some alien being sucked the life force out of one of our guards. Is that murder? I don't know. I'm going to have to talk to my lawyer.
That's right. Yeah, I would be like, you know, if your best friend got struck with a meteor, and you're like, do you think God just murdered that guy? I don't know. Let's think about it. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's a stupid line. It's fucking stupid.
What I originally wanted to talk about was one of the stupider scenes in the movie.
Okay,
the helicopter scene with the blood vampire.
See, did I not mention
why? And she says, you know, after that scene where the blood vampire falls through the floor of the helicopter.
She just fades.
And Carlson screams, "We've lost her. Her body's in London." He says that's one of the batty, illogical screenplay's better lines. I don't know why she thinks that's a better line.
Can you not empathize with me, though? I mentioned that scene. I was like, that doesn't make any sense.
That's not a very good scene.
It's like...
I empathize with you completely. I enjoyed the movie despite its many faults. She says, though,
just let me stop there for a second. Yeah. And one of the reasons that scene in particular... if you have this crazy superhero power to form yourself out of the goo of your host into a corporeal form, isn't that just the most amazing fucking superpower right there? And that's it. Just fucking gone with a whimper. You know, we lost her. She's like a bad TV. She detuned and now she's in London somewhere, right? Okay.
The problem was whoever was editing this film.
It's fucking terrible.
Was sitting there,
a stupid scene.
On their big editing bed cutting film. And he goes to the director and the producer that are sitting over his shoulder. He goes, "This scene makes no sense. I'm cutting the scene." And the producer goes, "I spent $200,000 on
that
scene.
That's right.
You're leaving that fucking scene in the movie."
We had to get
And the director
Patrick-
goes, "Yes, Lee, do what the producer says."
We had to put Patrick Stewart in a cast to get his face right. So
Patrick Stewart was in the hospital
dummy.
From 2 days from oxygen
eczema
deprivation
or whatever.
We're leaving that fucking scene. And, yeah, no, exactly. I think that's probably. I would not be surprised if what I just described happened.
It's fucking in some so fucking stupid. In Come on.
But it's weird that she calls it one of the better lines. I don't know why she calls it that. I think she's making a joke that that's one of the better lines. Because right, next she says, this movie has few such comic flashes. and that mostly it is painfully solemn. Though I can't really agree with that. I enjoyed some of the dry wit. She calls Steve Railback's performance of Carlson dolorous, which I have no, but do you know what that means?
I just looked it up.
What does it mean?
It means feeling or expressing great sorrow or distress.
He's distressed. I guess. He calls Peter Firth, who plays Kane, Kurt, which is right. And he says the characters snap out their lines without a trace of real enthusiasm. I mean, I guess I just chalked it up as a sort of a dry, reserved British.
I just chalked up. Well, I chalked up Steve's performance as bad acting, but whatever.
She says, to go on the screenplay by Dan O'Bannon, flings together elements as disparate as bats, zombies, and a contraption shaped like an enormous umbrella, but the results are nonetheless sterile.
I heard that spaceship was actually derived from an asparagus or an artichoke. I think an artichoke.
Hmm. Wow, I sort of like those spaceship designs.
That's fine. Yeah.
And she says she's amazed that Hooper, the director of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, doesn't even make the movie scary at all.
That's not
says,
scary.
As a result, I don't think it's meant to be. As overall, the special effects by the Dykstra group become the film's cheap selling point. And that Henry Mancini's score is by no means the film's most bewildering aspect. And she sums it up as Life Force is zombies on parade.
Which is weird because now we're getting the zombie vampire
hybrid. Because,
again. Yeah.
Well, I mean, because the secondary infection creatures are sort of zombie-like more than vampire-like, right?
It all comes back to Richard Matheson's I Am Legend. Always comes back to that.
Well, maybe they'll make a movie about that someday.
Maybe, yeah. I'm in Ms. Maslin's camp on most of Life Force, I must say. So, you know.
I think this one is one of those movies that strikes right down the division between you and I.
I think it definitely skirts the ragged border.
And be quite honest with you, I expected, this is sort of what I expected some of the movies in my Dan O'Bannon-a-thon to be.
Yeah,
weird, interesting messes.
I'm looking forward to the Philip K. Dick inspired Dan O'Bannon because I think that's some of the best stuff which is coming up here in the never ending Dan O'Bannon-a-thon of Mark.
There's
Hudson.
Only two more films in the Dan O'Bannon-a-thon.
I know. I think that's it, right? That's pretty much all Dan O'Bannon.
Oh, there's some lesser
on the
films,
planet.
Which I don't think even I wouldn't want to put you through. And I enjoy putting you through films you won't enjoy.
Okay, so man, we've been doing creature features. It seems like the majority of this the past 10.
Yeah, I'm sort of surprised by you picking a romantic drama. It's out of the norm. I'm surprised.
I know. So next week is the movie Closer, which I believe started out as a play, and it's definitely a jag out of the ditch we've been in, or the rut, let me not call it a ditch, of the creature features, which has been like the past three movies, including this one, I would say. And we're going to do Closer. And one of the, have you seen Closer?
No, I have not. I don't usually like romantic dramas. I avoid them.
Well, you'll enjoy
I don't like the feels.
A little Natalie Portman and a G-string, which we can all kind of get behind.
Well, you know how I watch The Black Swan.
Naked.
I fast forwarded through it just to watch the lesbian scenes and I was disappointed.
That's so fucking tacky. It's a good movie. Really? You just blew through it for Why isn't on? You just hit Mr. Skin. You didn't have to go through all that, right?
I was on my DVR. I think Gene recorded it.
Not really the greatest movie, I must say, but whatever. No, Closer. The thing about Closer, and one of the reasons I it's kind of in my own personal cult movie. It's not a cult movie by any stretch. Is Clive fucking Owen? Clive Owen in this is a fucking master of his domain, the character that he plays, in such a way that you are fearful yet intoxicated by his power. It's hard to describe Clive Owen in this movie other than his honesty is used as a weapon in such a way that just is just it's a fantastic performance. Mm. He just totally just fucking destroys the Jude Law character, and I don't want to give it away, but it's fucking awesome. So anyway, if you haven't seen it, please check out Closer. It's definitely different than pretty much the past 10 movies we've been reviewing.
So the tone is slightly different than
it does Life take Force? It does take place in London.
I think we're seeing a theme here.
And there are females that are sucking the life out of men in this movie. So
are those tits?
Is there tits? I want to say there is, but don't hold me to it. So, and it has Julia Roberts, who I hate in it, but
oh God,
she's okay.
Julia Roberts. Ugh.
I know, but I can stand her in this. And I think it's because, like most of the characters in this movie, they're not particularly likable. They're anti-heroes, except for Clive Owen, who's really an anti-hero. But anyway, he's sort of the Mad Max of dramatic romantic characters, I guess.
So I think that I'm having a feeling that when I ask you next week, so what did Rose think of this movie? You may actually be able to answer me.
Rose owns it, man. So
there we go. I just keep asking that question.
One for the ladies. Next week, our film is Closer. I don't know what year it was released or what the director's name is, but just go ahead and Google it. And I don't think there's any other movies called Closer, but Clive Owen's in it, so that should make it pretty easy to find. So until next week.
I brought the Pendothal.
Thanks, Lampson. That'll be all.